Thank you for everyone to take their seats, please, the members of the committee. Call the Senate Education Committee to order. Today is Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. The time is 3:32. In attendance are Senator Coghill, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Stevens. We're waiting for Senator Costello, who should, there she is. So we have our full membership here. We have a quorum to conduct business. This is our first hearing of the second session of the 31st legislature. And remind everyone to please silence your cell phones. Fortunately, I left mine in my office, so I'm fine. I'd like to recognize and thank Senate Records for record keeping. Jenny Foy, thank you for being here. The LIO staff for helping with the phone system. Our moderators, Doug Bridge and Amanda Kraft, and of course, committee aide, Tim Lampkin. Today we'll be hearing a sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, sponsored by Senator Begich, and also Senate Bill 151, sponsored by the governor. Both these bills are very similar to each other, slight differences relating primarily, relating entirely to literacy, to early learning and literacy, and the what has been referred to as the Alaska Reads Act. It's my intention to rule out both these bills simultaneously, get the conversation on the table, understand the differences that may occur, hear from the stakeholders and the administration, and entertain questions and have discussion on the bill, and then, of course, hold the bill for further review. For the purpose of paperwork reduction, most of the documentation you have in your binders are identical for each bill, and also to reduce duplication of the presentation slides and various background research that we'll be going through today will be found in your packet for Senate Bill 6. Any questions or comments from the committee before we begin this hearing? Then for introductions, I'd like to call Senator Begich and Commissioner Mike Johnson to the table, if you would, for opening comments. A little tag team going on here today, and appreciate you both being here. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. And again, thank you to Commissioner Johnson as well for being here. I want to start with some brief introductory notes, Mr. Chairman, and then I will, after those introductory notes, I'm going to go through a sponsor statement that's on the record now and has been provided to the public as well. And then Commissioner Johnson will go through a presentation of the Alaska Reads Act, and then we will be available for questions before apologetically saying a very long sectional analysis. That said, there's also a comparison document between the two bills so that we'll be able to walk you through that process as well. I want to begin by acknowledging a couple of things right off the top, and one of those is that in this body, one of the champions of reading has been Senator Shelley Hughes. Her bills, SB 79 and the combination bill, SB 114, speak to a lot of the same issues that are here, so in spirit, a lot of what she has been working on for much of her time here in the Senate is incorporated in elements of this bill. And Representative Ledoux, and she has also championed the cause of literacy and reading. And I also wanted to take this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to extend my apologies to Senator Hughes for not more directly involving her in the process. And that is my fault and my fault alone. So I apologize to you, Senator Hughes, for that. But I want you to know that your voice has been heard, and that your commitment to reading and to education is absolutely critical to our work here at this table, and I know the governor shares that commitment. So I also want to acknowledge the work of the commissioner and the governor. Had it not been for them and their desire to see effective change in education policy, we would not be sitting here together today. It was the commissioner and the governor who reached out and asked me about pre-K as early as December of 2018. The governor specifically met with me in December, late December, and his primary question to me at the time was, how do we know that the pre-kindergarten work we're going to do, if we do it, will work? And I think that was a fair question. And so we have had a series of conversations since then talking about what makes for effective pre-kindergarten. You have all seen SB 99 before, and then also this version, SB 6. This bill was partially written by the Department of Education and Early Development some years ago. It has had the advantage of input. That part of the bill, the pre-kindergarten part of the bill, has had the advantage of input from our early learning community. We have spent considerable amount of time talking with members, not just of this committee, who have heard testimony on the bill over the years, but we will hear from some of those same folks later today. There's some invited testimony. The governor's commitment to reading and literacy is a critical component for successful pre-kindergarten. You can't have pre-kindergarten that then doesn't have the support of the districts from those critical years from kindergarten to third grade. And you can't truly have effective reading if you don't have kids prepared when they come to school to read. So these two components merge in this piece of legislation. We, myself, the governor, listened extensively, Commissioner, to the testimony of people who've come before this committee over the last 3 years. We've heard people talk about everything from the importance of parental engagement and involvement in their kids, parental engagement and involvement in the schools, the need for teachers and parents and schools to be more integrated in terms of how they work with each other. We understand issues of turnover. We understand these are all comprehensive issues that are out there. We can't attack everything and try to deal with everything in one bill, but what we have done with this piece of legislation is create a continuum from pre-kindergarten all the way to that third grade, which we think will prepare kids to graduate down the road, effectively prepare them to graduate down the road. I want to also talk about a couple of other things, and then I will go into the sponsor statement. We have extensively worked on this bill. When we disagreed on language, we sat down, and the governor was actively engaged in that conversation, and we talked about why we had disagreements about language and what we were trying to do. And what we did is we put aside traditional political labels of right and left, and we focused on what is it kids need to learn. What we came up with are these two bills. The difference between these two bills is minor. The first difference is because the Department of Law and Legislative Legal draft things differently. The same language is here, identical language, but in different sections. It has no material difference, and so it has the same fiscal notes, and you'll see those in time. The governor's bill has a letter of has legislative intent language, which we traditionally don't do much of here in the legislature, so we did not include that, but that is, again, a minor difference. We have provided transition language to allow the commissioner a little bit more flexibility because there's some complexities in this bill that might require more flexibility on the part of the commissioner. And then there's a slight difference in the schedule for pre-kindergarten, but it's a minor difference, and it was actually an error. There are also some minor errors, I think, that the commissioner is going to speak to as well. But mostly you're talking about bills that are virtually identical, to the point where we even talked about specific words and made sure those words met each other's conditions. And I have to tell you, I have received a little flack from people in my end of the spectrum, and I understand the governor's received a little on his end as well, because there are people, I'm shocked to say, who don't like me, and there are people who don't like the governor. And they have decided that there might be reasons not to support a piece of legislation because either he or I are endorsing it or supporting it. In the end, this won't be our bill. This will be your bill. It'll be Alaska's bill, and that's what we have intended from the very beginning. And so we're willing to take the flack. We're willing to push for what's important for our kids. And we're doing so on the backs of the learning and advice that we have from the other members here at the table. Early education is imperative for our state. When examining our long-term economy and the opportunity for all Alaskans, it's essential to consider how we increase that productivity as well as reduce potential drains resulting from the unrealized potential of our citizens. I'm reminded of comments that Senator Coghill said in committee some time ago, where he talked about not realizing the full potential of Alaskan citizens. We believe that this bill will allow us to be on that path. I think that's important for all of us to hear. Early education, the ability to read, is what makes that happen. The markers for success develop early in life, and brain science underscores that how we use our brains at those crucial early years before we enter kindergarten, as well as how prepared we are when we enter K-12, will make a difference and have a dramatic impact on our ability to then learn. Our ability then to ensure that the supports are in place through reading and reading preparation will ensure that we don't lose the gains that we make through pre-kindergarten. Research shows us that those who live in poverty have an incredibly difficult time catching up with others if they come to school ill-prepared. That same research shows that those who have a high-quality preschool experience go on to future academic and personal success. Studies such as the Perry Preschool Project Study, and I think I mentioned this in our last hearing, that there's a recent update of that goes now multi-generational, has shown that for every dollar invested in high-quality pre-K, you can save up to $7 in the long run in government expense by reducing the need for remedial education, involvement in the criminal justice system, and public assistance systems. High-quality pre-K, supported by a strong learning component, ensures that we build the best citizens who don't become a burden to the state. High-quality education programs are an investment in our future. Universal voluntary early education available to students before they enter kindergarten improves school readiness, reading levels, and long-term economic performance. If you look at our own current pre-kindergarten programs, such as those in Anchorage, MATSU, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, and Nome, all of which we have data from our own Department of Education, they show that these early education programs, including programs like Head Start, Best Beginnings, Parents as Teachers, provide access to families for such high-quality early education. But we only cover 10% of Alaska's kids today with these programs. It means 90% of our kids aren't covered, and what the sponsor substitute for SB 6 would do would take the lessons learned from our own programs from over a decade's worth of pre-kindergarten and apply them across the state. This bill also establishes a new statewide literacy program and intensive reading intervention services for students experiencing reading deficiencies starting in kindergarten through grade 3. It also has a component where up to 10 struggling schools will be given direct support and reading intervention provided by the Department of Education to help those schools for an entire school year. And that particular part of the bill has up to 5 years of support. DEED-funded reading intervention specialists will support those existing school staff, engage and build community understanding and evidence-based reading, and work with local teachers and support staff to improve reading scores and assessments through evidence-based reading instruction. This bill includes thrice annually reading proficiency screenings or assessments, first, second, and third grade. That will help us get an insight into each student's reading proficiency and to identify those reading deficiencies that may exist. We looked at the work of the interim committee that dealt with dyslexia. We drew from some of the information provided by that committee to help improve that section of the bill to ensure that we are looking at audio, oral, and other types of learning deficiencies that may exist. There's much to be said about early education, but the critical piece is that children's pace of intellectual development peaks at the age of 6. We develop all of these synaptical connections in the brain by 2. The ones we use are the ones we keep between 2 and 10. And that determines who you're going to be and how you're going to be. There's school outcome data and academic research that shows that if you participate in early education programs, you'll develop soft skills tied to future success, including conscientiousness, perseverance, sociability, and curiosity. We have seen those results nationally. We have actually also seen them here. The current teaching strategies gold assessment shows that, and we've provided that data to you in the past, show that children in early education programs in Alaska show dramatic growth, even comparing student aptitude changes between the fall and the spring. These successes are ones we should all share, and it's time for all Alaskans to have that opportunity to participate in the success of these demonstration efforts. This legislation, crafted by the governor, myself, and the Department of Education, working with the advice that we have received over the years, does that. The Alaska Reads Act will offer school districts the opportunity to develop high-quality early education programs that are culturally appropriate, tailored to their students, through a three-year grant process that will be described later today. It's based on the successful work of Oklahoma and a number of other states. Smart investments in the past have made our state one of the most economically equitable in the country. Similar smart investments in early education have the potential to create a generation of Alaskans prepared to make the greatest impact that we could imagine. I'll say just one more time, I would not be here today were it not for the hard work, in particular as chair of the Education Committee when I first came into the Senate of Senator Hughes and her identification of the importance of reading and education in this process. So thank you again, Senator. And I turn it over at this time to Commissioner Johnson.
Before the commissioner starts, I just want to make sure you understand that this committee does like both yourself and the governor, and we also like the commissioner. So please have you with us, Mr. Commissioner. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the record, Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education and Early Development. And with that comment, I'll return some of the affection to this committee. And we talked in general terms about our presentations, but I may repeat some of the thanks, but I think they are due. It's a privilege to be in front of this committee to talk about the Alaska Reads Act. It truly is. The reality is, however, that any one of you at this table could be sitting here introducing this act, and that's because your fingerprints are all over it. Senator Stevens, you could be here, and any of your staff, because you've led this committee and facilitated many conversations in committee on reading policy and the importance of reading in our schools. Senator Hughes has been out in front of this issue for years and years and years, and a bill that she introduced is a backbone in the Alaska Reads Act. And we've lost track of how many community meetings, PTO groups, and families that she's been in front of talking about reading. Senator Costello, you could be here because you've used your voice in a really powerful way as a mom and an educator and a legislator to advocate for good policy that goes all the way down to the classroom. Senator Coghill, a decade ago when I was a superintendent, you stood in my office and we had a conversation over a small box of books on the importance of reading of youngsters. And of course, Senator Begich, who has been a champion for early childhood education and early reading instruction for many, many years in this committee and in other settings around the state. And also the governor, who, though has a big job, came to this project as an educator, a teacher, a principal, a superintendent, a school board president, and often comments as a father and how important it was to teach his own kids to read. And the details in this bill, he spent a lot of time over the last few months digging into the details of this bill and having conversations with some of his former colleagues and other people that he's worked with on reading. He often referenced his own experience in the classroom as we worked through individual words and sections of this bill. And then, as you know, he often talks about the moral imperative that rises above politics when it comes to kids learning to read. And then we probably don't have time for me to talk about all the people sitting behind me. Many of them have dedicated lots and lots of time to making sure kids get a great education. And I wish I could go and call them all by name, but you know them, and there are definite plans for them to be in front of the committee to share their perspective on this bill and how to make it the best bill possible. And so finally, Mr. Chair, I want to acknowledge, though, that today, while we've been working and preparing for this hearing, there's been children in classrooms all over the state learning to read and teachers helping them to do that. in great ways. And today, a first grader walked out of school knowing how to read a word that he didn't know how to read when he walked in school. And that's way more remarkable and way more life-changing than we have time to ponder in a committee like this. And so I'm honored to be here introducing the Alaska Reads Act, but I'm also humbled to be here because of your commitment to this issue over years and years and years. So thank you. I want to set some context for how we got to this point. As you know, the mission statement for the department is an excellent education for every student every day. And our vision statement is taken from your statutes, 1403015. All students will succeed in their education and work, shape worthwhile and satisfying lives for themselves, exemplify the best values of society, and be effective in improving the character and quality of the world about them. And if you look at those and ponder them for a moment, nothing up there can happen if a student can't read well. And so to provide a great education, we need to be focused on kids learning to read. The department's role in that is to make sure we provide information, resources, and leadership to support educators around this state and families as they provide an excellent education for every student every day. Over the last couple of years, many, many Alaskans have gathered, including members of both education committees, to develop the Alaska Education Challenge. And we started with shared commitments that we were going to improve student success, and reading is fundamental to that. In September of 2016, the board set some strategic priorities, and you can see the timeline there. As we've moved over the last couple of years through the Alaska Education Challenge, the board set some priorities, and we recently received a grant aligned with those priorities. There's five strategic priorities in the Alaska Education Challenge, the first one being reading. Lots of people participated in that process, so the focus and priority of reading is not something the department came up with, or Senator Begich came up with, or Governor Dunleavy came up with. It's something that many Alaskans came together and identified as a priority. The Alaska Education Challenge has really three parts: those shared commitments, the five measurable goals, and then the targeted priorities and strategies to make that happen, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Goal number one, as you can see, is to support all students to read at grade level by the end of third grade. And included in the reading task force that took place a couple of years ago, led by Posey Boggs, who's in the room, noted that we have years and years of evidence to show that most all students are capable of learning to read. And so that's why we set that goal. Goal one, the students that do not read proficiently by third grade fall further and further behind. As their peers use reading skills to acquire new skills, these students remain on square one. And that's a quote directly from the task force. Our need in the state is great. There's lots of great instruction happening, but as you can see on the NAEP, Alaska compared to other states in our nation, we're at the very bottom, according to the 2019 NAEP results. On our own PEAKS assessment, 34 to 37% of our students have shown proficiency in language arts and math. The next slide notes that when you compare the reading proficient level in third grade compared to the dropout rate, our bottom five districts, you can see, the reading proficiency level, when that is low, the dropout rate is high. But in schools where there's high reading proficiency, the dropout rate is little to none. And so reading proficiency in third grade correlates to graduation rates. So we're here to talk about a specific turning a priority into a policy with the Alaska Reads Act. I'm wearing an Alaska Reads Act button. Because what the Alaska Reads Act signifies is this is not one person's bill or two people's bill, but this is a bill that represents a lot of work over years. It's the Alaska Reads Act. Even today as we're sitting here, my colleagues, other state education chiefs are meeting in Washington, D.C. today in response to the last NAEP results. And so about 25 to 30 state chiefs gathered in Washington, D.C. today for a one-day meeting a roundtable to talk about reading policy around our country and how we as a nation can address the challenges that we have in reading. So I'm going to try not to be repetitive of what you'll hear in the sectional analysis, but I want to frame the Reading Act. There's three main parts. One of the parts has two really important pieces that I want to highlight, but as Senator Begich noted, an important piece, and just for the committee's understanding, so the Alaska Reads Act came from hearing many discussions in this committee on different aspects of how to address our reading issue. Some folks talked about pre-K, some folks talked about reading intervention, and we saw an opportunity to combine all those into one act that can support students around the state, the first part being the pre-K, high-quality pre-K, and it's important to note the high-quality part. The bill includes specific language around standards related to pre-K programs. The second part is a comprehensive reading policy, reading intervention policy, that includes specific language related to dyslexia, both screening and interventions that are specific to the issues that we've learned about dyslexia, particularly from the report from the task force. And the third part is also an important piece. The third part focuses on the schools that our students are in. And we know we have some low-performing schools in our state that have been there for a number of years. And the bill provides specific opportunities for the department to provide resources, including people in those schools, to help build capacity for quality reading intervention and reading instructional programs. So that's a high-level overview of the bill. We can go to the sectional analysis and walk through each section.
Okay, thank you. That'd be great to do that if you're ready. I just really appreciate the fact that everyone is working together on this. That's just really proof that it's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't really care who gets credit for it. And that goes to from the governor to yourself, commissioner, to Senator Begich, to your staff at the department, to this committee. And we've made great progress, and I just really appreciate everyone's willingness to find a way to make this work and do what's best for the kids of Alaska. At this point, before we go into the sectional, are there any comments or questions from members of the committee? Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the commissioner, Senator Begich, for bringing this forward. It is something so important to our children now and their future and the future of this great state. I can't think of anything more important, really, if we were to accomplish nothing else this session but get this bill through, how it will impact our future. And so I'm glad it's called the Alaska Reads Act, because it will belong to our whole state. It doesn't matter whose name is attached to it. It's for our children and for the future of our state. And I took the opportunity through this last year, you know, as legislators, we often attend many meetings in the community on many subjects. And it didn't matter what the topic was at the time. I remember going to a meeting about crime reduction. I remember going to a meeting that was all about the budget. And when I'd be asked, what can we do, I brought this topic up, because it does impact the future so much. You know, we've heard for years in America that the great equalizer is education. However, if children don't master the objectives at each grade level and they're moved through the system, the diploma at the end of 12th grade is really meaningless. And education has not been the great equalizer. And what I see that children from perhaps generations have been trapped in a family where there's been poverty and they have not been successful in school, we will give them the tools to be successful. And these are children that might otherwise be incarcerated and at great cost to the state. As Senator Begich mentioned, these are children that might be on public assistance, that might be on Medicaid. We will open up opportunities to these children, and what our state will look like in 15, 20 years will be drastically different just because of the reading portion of this bill. So I am happy to see it move forward. I was thrilled to see that it was getting traction and momentum and support across the aisle. So I just wanted to say that, and thank you so much for bringing forward. You didn't need to acknowledge me. I appreciate it. I'm just very, very glad and look forward to working on this. I did have a question, if I may, because on the previous slide, it mentioned school improvement, and Commissioner, you you said that the department would be able to help equip the schools. I don't remember the language you used, but to be able to provide support and resources. And my question about the school improvement, as we dig into it, and maybe in the section we'll hear it and in future hearings, but is there an accountability piece attached to that school improvement, not just an accountability piece for the department, but for the districts themselves?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, absolutely. So in my opinion, the Alaska Reads Act enhances the accountability system that we already have in place through the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is the federal school accountability law. And so as we've worked through and watched the bill developed both over the last couple of months, but over the last couple of years as the committee has been hearing your bill and other bills, we at the department will work to integrate it all seamlessly for accountability purposes. So we are not, we don't want to create multiple accountability systems. We want the accountability system that we have now to work in sync with the Alaska Reads Act, and we believe that we can do that in the way that it's been drafted.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Senator Hughes, there's a specific section too that directly relates to accountability in the bill that we came to agreement to add in. Partially in one of the areas that we've looked, which is the Colorado Reads Act, they've revisited that bill a number of times. In fact, some years ago, Senator Stevens introduced a Reads bill, I think it was in the 2013 session, it might have been, that was based on the original Colorado Reads Act. That was that act, after it passed, they found some issues that needed to be corrected. Those were then addressed in a second act. And even today, now, they're addressing the Colorado Reads Act again, and they're specifically looking at the accountability section. So we have presupposed that in ensuring that that accountability measures are embedded in the bill itself.
Thank you. And thank you for your comments, Senator Hughes. They're very well said. I appreciate those thoughts. Any other comments, questions before we move on? Then I think we're ready to go on to the sectional, if that's, if you're ready for that. Okay, I believe we have Luki Tobian from Senator Begich's office and Aaron Hardin, a legislative liaison for the department. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Luki Gail Tobin. The special character in my name is Alt-0246, and I am a legislative aide for Senator Begich. I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague from the Department of Education and Early Development as we walk you through the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill, the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6 and Senate Bill 151.
Thank you, Luki. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Aaron Hardin, and I have the pleasure of serving as the legislative liaison for the Department of Education and Early Development. It's a pleasure to meet all of you.
Thank you both for being here.
All right, so I will start. It's a little bit repetitive because Senator Begich did me the honor of comparing the few differences between the bill, but I just want to reiterate those before we get going. When putting together the dual sectionals, we had a discussion on whether to note all the similarities or the differences, and as he instinctively noted, there are very few differences, so we thought we'd point those out first, and then we'll dive into a side-by-side sectional. So the first difference between the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6 and SB 151 is simply the drafting differences between legislative, legal, and Department of Law. So you'll notice there are some few language differences, singular versus plural references, again, all very minor, but we'll help you make those matches where sections appear different as we go through. The second difference between the two bills is that the early education grants fiscal cycle in the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6 in years 4, 5, and 6 are slightly different than the grant years that you see in Senate Bill 151. They are slightly more aggressive by 5%, I believe, which would be the equivalent of, I think, a school district or two. So, again, a very minor difference during the drafting process, and we are completely comfortable using the percentages in the sponsor substitute as we move forward with this. The third difference between the two bills, as Senator Begich again noted, is simply that SB 151 includes intent language, which I know is not typically included. And then finally, the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6 establishes a deadline for when the Department of Education must conduct a performance ranking of all districts, with respect to the early education program grants, and it sets a deadline of August 1st, 2020, and we'll discuss that later when we get to that section of the bill. Those are the only four notable differences between the bills. So with that, I'll turn it over to Luki to get started with Section 1. So.
Thank you, Luki.
Section 1 of 6 pages. So as my colleague described, there are drafting differences, and we are seeing those right off the bat. With Section 1 of Sponsor Substitute of Senate Bill 6 establishing this act as the Alaska Reads Act. This correlates to a portion of Section 13 in Senate Bill 151, which then establishes the Alaska Reads Act.
So Section 2 of the...
I'm sorry, just to make it absolutely clear for the record, would you identify yourself? It's sort of hard to tell the difference between your voices. That was Luki earlier, and now we're back to you.
Yes, this is Erin Hardin for the record. For Section 2 in the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6 is the Section 1 in Senate Bill 151, which defines a public elementary school. And what we're doing with this section is amending the language to include an early education program, whether operated within a public school or by an outside organization. And we're adding language that says that the programs must be approved or supervised by the department. So again, we're simply changing the definition of a public elementary school to include a reference to an early education program.
For the record, this is Luki Gail Tobin with the Office of Senator Begich. For Section 3 of the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6, which is included in Senate Bill 151, Section 7, we establish a new section, Alaska Statute 1430-765, which is including the reading intervention services, which are later described in the next section of the bill.
This is Erin Hardin again. Moving on to Section 4 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, which appears as Section 3 in the Senate Bill 151, establishes that a 4 or 5-year-old who has not attended kindergarten is eligible to attend a public school early education program.
Luki Tobin for the record. In Section 5 of the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 pertains to the last portion of Senate Bill 151, Section 13, and this establishes the annual reporting requirements for school districts regarding student performance metrics for grades 3 through K, which were discussed earlier.
Yes, please, Senator Begich, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to reinforce that that is addressing the accountability question that was brought up earlier. That's the section that does that.
Thank you.
Moving along, Section 6 of Sponsor Substitute of Senate Bill 6 aligns with the Section 4 of Senate Bill 151, and this is the original language of Senate Bill 6, Version M. So these are the sections that create that stair-step 3-year grant program that provides training and assists school districts in developing their early education programs. So as we described, there are some minor differences in the grant schedule between the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 and Senate Bill 151. That's that 5% over years 4, 5, and 6. These equate to approximately when one or two schools will be able to apply for early education grants. As mentioned earlier, Commissioner Johnson and Senator Begich are in concurrence with the sponsor substitute schedule. So, in both the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 and Senate Bill 151, in year one, the lowest performing 10% of school districts will be eligible for a grant to establish their district-wide high-quality early education programs. That goes on into year two. It's 15% of those school districts that will be able to apply for that 3-year grant program. In year three, the grants will be available to lowest performing will be available to the lowest performing 15% of schools, the third lowest performing 15% of school districts. And then the bills diverge with the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 in year 4 addressing the third highest 20% of school districts, and Senate Bill 151 is focusing on that 15%, the third highest 15%. In year 5, sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 and in Senate Bill 151 are looking at the second highest performing 20% of school districts. And then finally, in the final year of the grant cycles, sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6 has the highest performing 20% of the districts, and in Senate Bill 151 is the remaining 25% of school districts.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please, Senator Begich.
I think it might be helpful if I occasionally clarify these things. So I will say, too, that one of the things about the way that the process goes through here, the way that you do these various years, these are what we call cohorts, is that there are some school districts that would already qualify for pre-kindergarten and might not even, by the time you get to that sixth year, you might not even have a sixth year. That's one of the sort of advantages of the bill, and we'll talk more about that later.
Thank you.
So as we've seen in both bills, over that six fiscal years, all school districts will be offered an opportunity to participate. So at the end of these three-year grant cycles, the Department of Education and Early Development will have the opportunity and be responsible for determining if the district's early education program complies with state standards, and those are established by the State Board of Education. And we'll see that in Section 9 as we go forward. Moving right along, in Section 7 of Sponsor Substitute of Senate Bill 6 and in Senate Bill 151, Section 5, the Department of Education and Early Development is directed to supervise all the early education programs. And those are the programs that they have the opportunity to approve, whose early education programs were created through this grant program, and that establishes. And this section also establishes a new literacy program, which is Alaska Statute 1407-065, and also reading intervention programs in the schools, which we're going to have a description of in a later section.
All right. This is Erin Hart again for the record, just trying to follow my place here. For the next section, which is Section 8 in the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, correlates with Section 6 of the Senate Bill 151. This section defines an early education program in this section as a pre-kindergarten program for students 3 to 5 years old if its primary function is educational. You'll note here that three-year-old students are included in this definition. However, they are not included in this program that the bill proposes, but we're including them to ensure that they still remain eligible for existing state and federal programs. So for the purposes of this early education program that we're discussing, we're specifically talking about 4 and 5 year olds.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. Just to clarify, this has come up a number of times when we've gone through the old version of the pre-K bill, and this was a recommendation from a number of the programs that are early learning programs, so they wouldn't be inadvertently excluded as a result of the definition. But to remind everyone that this bill, as Ms. Hardin just said, is the bill's grants program is exclusive to 4 and 5 year olds, and this was worked out with the early learning community over the last. It took almost 2 years to come up with that one, but it was something that came up in committee in the past. I just wanted to clarify that because it can be confusing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Continuing on, this is Erin Hardin again. I'm moving on to Section 9 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, which appears as Section 7 in SB 151. Under this section, it allows for the department to select and purchase supplemental reading materials and support the reading intervention services provided under a new section of the bill. It's a new section in SB 151, the previous section with respect. All right, I'll let Luki continue with that. Thank you.
This is Luki Gail-Tobin for the record. Now we're going into the sponsor substitute Section Bill 6, Section 10, which aligns with Senate Bill 151, Section 9. And this section directs the board to adopt regulations that establish standards for the early education programs that are half day, full day, and less than a half day. These programs are going to be locally designed and evidence-based. Through collaboration and discussions with both the Department of Education and Early Development and Senator Begich's office, we came to realize that in addition to what was established in Senate Bill 6, that the lead teacher of the programs must hold a valid teacher certificate and has satisfactorily completed a minimum of 6 credit hours in early childhood education, or have completed 6 credits within 1 year of their teacher's employment. We also added an additional provision that would also allow a teacher of 5 or more years who has experience teaching kindergarten or other early education programs to also be qualified. This was to make sure that we had a really qualified bench to begin with of teachers that were available to teach these programs. Regulations are also established in the sections that develop the appropriate objectives and accommodations for all children, which allows the districts to adapt content to be culturally appropriate for local communities. Moving along to Section 11 of Sponsor Substitute of Senate Bill 6, which aligns with Section 10 of Senate Bill 151. The section states that for funding purposes, an early education student shall be counted in the school district's average daily membership as a half-day student once the early education program has been approved by the department. So in Section 12 of the Sponsor Substitute of Senate Bill 6 and in Section 11 of Senate Bill 151, we talk about how the sections describe how students in early education programs approved by the department in the definition of an elementary school. In Sponsor Substitute of Section Bill 6, Section 13, and in Senate Bill 151, Section 12, there is a complete alignment of the language, which ensures that early education students who currently receive state or federal funding for early education are not included in the average daily membership for the purpose of funding.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Begich.
Again, to clarify this, since this has brought up questions up before and I wanted to describe that again, this is to avoid double dipping, so that you can't double count a kid. If you're already receiving funds for that kid, you can't then use this grants program to get twice the amount for one kid. So it's a way of avoiding some of the federal restrictions on how we supplant funding and to make sure that we're not violating any federal rules and those kinds of things. And this was brought to our attention by Early Education Committee some years ago. So that's why that section's in there.
Senator Carhill.
Based on that, but it would be allocated according to what a student would normally get, right?
They're
not going to be discounted at all.
No.
And the grant would be for the program, not for the student, is what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The chair, Senator Coghill, yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Senator Coghill.
Thank you. For the record, Aaron Hardin. We now dive into, my apologies, the first very meaty section of our sectional analysis.
First, question from Senator Hughes.
I actually realize I do have a question. Back in Section 11, the student early education program would be counted as a one-half of a full-time equivalent student in the ADM. But I think it was in the prior section, it referred to developing standards for a half-day program, a full-day program, or a program that is less than a half day. So no matter whether it's a half, more than half, or full, they would still be counted as a half day. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
You have an answer to that, Senator Begich.
I do. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that was to provide consistency should a district choose to have a full day program, but we will only be counting those children as a half day regardless.
Okay, thank you.
While we're at this point, I want to acknowledge the presence of Representative Hopkins and Story, who have joined us. Appreciate your being here. Please go ahead.
Thank you again, Aaron Hardin. So moving on to Section 14 of the Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 6. This section correlates to two different sections in Senate Bill 151, and those are Section 8 and Section 13. So we've now transitioned in the bill, and we are now focusing on the Reading Intervention Program section. So Section 14 in the Sponsor Substitute for Senate Bill 6 establishes a comprehensive reading intervention program designed to increase literacy for children in kindergarten through grade 3. The department will be required to establish a system of support for teachers of kindergarten through grade 3 students, adopt a statewide screening or assessment tool to identify students with reading deficiencies, and provide support to teachers of kindergarten through grade 3 students through training on the use of the statewide screening or assessment tool and on the science of reading. The department will be required to administer the statewide screening or assessment tool 3 times each school year, once in the fall, once in the winter, and once in the spring, beginning in the following school year, 2020. The statewide screening or assessment tool must determine specified skills at each grade level, and that's specific to kindergarten, first, and second and third grade. Continuing on in this section, school districts will be required to offer reading intervention services in addition to core reading instruction to all students in kindergarten through grade 3 who exhibit a reading deficiency as determined by the statewide screening or assessment. The reading intervention services must be provided by a district reading teacher and include explicit and systematic instruction with proven results based on scientific research. They must incorporate daily targeted small group reading instruction and be based on students' needs as determined by regular monitoring of student progress. The reading intervention services must be reviewed based on department-approved response to intervention or multi-tiered system support models. Continuing on in this same section, for each student participating in the reading intervention services, the district must establish an individual reading plan for each individual student. For all students with an individual reading plan and who also score in the lowest achievement level on the district screening or statewide reading assessment, the district must provide the reading intervention services both during and outside the school term. Outside the school term, the reading intervention services must be staffed with reading teachers and include a minimum of 70 hours of instructional time. Continuing on, districts or schools must notify parents in writing if a student exhibits a reading deficiency at any time during the school year. Notification must occur within 15 days of the deficiency being identified. And then after that, updates to parents are required every other week after initial notification. The initial notification must state the district or school has identified the student as having a reading deficiency and that an improvement plan will be developed. They must describe the current services the student receives and the proposed additional services the student will need to remedy the deficiency. The written notification must also explain the progress reports that will follow every 2 weeks and identify strategies the parent or guardian could use at home to help the student succeed in reading. If the student is in grade 3, the notification, hang on here, must, oh, I got my page numbers mixed up. 13, there we go. Must include a request for a meeting with the parent, the student's teacher, and other district staff to discuss appropriate grade level progression. The meeting must take place at least 45 days prior to the end of the school year. And if the student's parent is not able to attend, the student's teacher and additional school personnel will determine grade level progression for the student. This section also establishes that a student in grade 3 should demonstrate sufficient reading skills to progress to grade 4. Multiple pathways are provided for students to demonstrate these sufficient reading skills for progression to grade 4. Those include performance on the statewide reading screening or assessment, or through an alternative reading assessment as determined by the State Board of Education, or as evidenced through a student reading portfolio. I want to emphasize here that there are multiple pathways provided for students to demonstrate proficiency.
Could you help us understand what the portfolio is? Or possibly Senator Baggage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to actually send my lifeline to the commissioner on that one.
And you were just going along so great. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's not a term I understand.
And for the record, again, this is Michael Johnson, Commissioner of Education. Chair Stevens, a reading portfolio would be something that would have some parameters established by the state board, but would be something that the student and teacher put together to demonstrate their reading proficiency in ways other than a standardized assessment. So That can look any number of ways. It could be a teacher's record of reading with a student and the student showing proficiency in reading. It could be the student writing and reflecting on something he's read to show or she reading proficiency. So there's a number of ways that and a number of elements that you can include in a portfolio that gives the student an opportunity that may not perform well on a standardized assessment, but may be very proficient in reading and comprehension. And so with the teacher, being able to demonstrate that in more than one way in a collection of materials that evidences that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, then, if I can maybe add to that a little bit by asking, in a way, this also will accommodate some of the different learning disabilities we learned about during the task force, and is that not correct?
Absolutely. So I know you'll hear testimony from Posey Boggs and others that will illustrate not only some of those other elements that give students the opportunity to demonstrate their proficiency other than a standardized test that may have a disability, but also why that's important for those particular students.
Thank you. And Senator Hughes, you had a comment.
I was just thinking, I know some students freeze up in fear when they take tests, and it impacts how they respond, where they can actually, I actually had a child who would know all the material, and we'd have a back and forth question and answer the evening before, and then the next day, the very thing they knew, they froze up, and they just consistently had a difficulty with that. And so I was just wondering for this whether something in the portfolio might look like the student reading aloud and being videotaped, and then the teacher asking the questions about the reading and the child being able to answer them. So a little bit different than sitting and taking a test. Is that the kind of thing that might be used to show proficiency to provide proof?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, absolutely. So, and there's other places in the country that use this kind of model for a student to have multiple ways to show proficiency. I've seen a number of those, but video is one of them I've seen, but some of the others are not immediately coming to mind. But video is one, but also just an audio recording, but also a teacher's record, a written record of that opportunity with a student to sit down, have them read, and the student recording, I mean the teacher recording, what went well with that and what may be the gaps in that, and then identifying was it a proficient reading or was it not. And so video is one way to do that. But for some students, even that may be intimidating, and they may be able to, they may not be able to demonstrate proficiency, or they may be able to demonstrate proficiency even, but not the level of proficiency that they have through that experience. So they may, though, be able to write their own paper saying, I read this and I comprehended it, and that could be evidence also. The key is that it's a portfolio isn't just a way for a student to skate through. It's a collection of evidence that they are proficient in reading, and that evidence can be collected in any number of ways that we could identify some at the table, but there may be ways that, you know, we wouldn't even think of that a teacher and a student would come together to demonstrate an evidence that they truly are proficient.
I have a follow-up to that.
Yes, sorry,
just because we're using the word proficiency a lot, are we defining what proficiency means? Because we know that sometimes a child can read aloud and or read silently but not understand and comprehend necessarily what they've read. So are we defining it? And just I need some assurance there.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we have state standards that define that, and then we have a state assessment that assesses those particular standards that define what proficiency would look like.
Follow up? Can you just briefly tell us, so being able to look at a word and say what it is and what it means, and or a paragraph, it's comprehension plus being able to read it. Mm-hmm. So are those the standards? Or?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I feel like this is an opportunity to have multiple pathways for me to show my proficiency in what reading proficiency is. But I'll refer, knowing there's people behind me that are much more articulate than I am on this subject, but there's the science of reading talks about five things that need to happen for a student to be a proficient reader. They need to have a phonemic awareness. They need to be able to hear distinguishing distinct sounds in words. And then they need to understand phonics. So in other words, that print represents those sounds that they hear. And then they need to be able to do that fluently, so fluency. And then they need to have a growing vocabulary, so they have the background knowledge to then finally the fifth thing is comprehend. And so all those together create the context needed to be a proficient reader. So if you, for example, understand that words are made up of sounds, and you can understand that print represents those sounds, but you can't do that fluently, it's going to be very hard for you to get the other elements and be able to comprehend.
Thank you very much. I would like to acknowledge that Representative Ledoux has joined us, and she has great proficiency in reading. I know that. Thank you for being here. And Ms. Harden, I think we interrupted you. We were talking about all the ways that we can make sure that a student is up to speed, and I don't think you quite finished that paragraph.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Erin Harden again. So continuing on in that section, after we've discussed the multiple pathways, I want to acknowledge that there are good cause exemptions included in the bill language. Those are for such as a student having a disability or a student who is learning English as a second language. And lastly, the bill language includes a process for parents or guardians to request an exemption for their student. Continuing on in this section, districts must provide intensive reading intervention services to all students who do not progress or receive a good cause exemption. And for students who do not progress to grade 4 who previously experienced delayed grade level progression, an intensive acceleration class must also be provided by the district. And lastly, in this section, for the reading intervention services component, it also establishes annual reporting requirements for schools regarding student reading performance in those grades K through 3. Continuing on in this section, we're now moving to the, let's see here, the literacy program section. So let me make sure my notes are right here. We're still under Section 14 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6. We're now into Section 8 of Senate Bill 151. So under this section of Section 14 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, it establishes a literacy program to provide direct support and intervention services to up to 10 low-performing Alaska schools each year that apply for the services. The department will be responsible for providing each selected school up to 2 reading specialists. We've defined a reading specialist in the language as a certified teacher under Alaska Statute 1420 who is employed and funded by the department and who meets requirements that would be established by the state board. One specialist would be focused on the implementation of reading intervention services consistently across the classrooms, modeling effective instructional strategies, helping to coach and mentor teachers and paraprofessionals, train teachers in data literacy, lead and support reading leadership teams, and report on school and student performance to the department. The supporting reading specialist would assist with all of those activities I previously described, or they would serve as a reading specialist for the school's early education program, depending on the unique makeup and needs of that individual school. Continuing on in this section, the department would be required to establish a process for the reading specialist to report on program implementation, work with the reading specialist to improve, to establish improvement goals, including measures of interim progress, to select and purchase additional reading materials to supplement the reading intervention services, and pay travel costs for a reading specialist to attend relevant trainings identified or hosted by the department. The department would also be responsible for periodically reviewing staff development programs and recommending to the board programs that meet high quality standards.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Begich, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one of the reasons for this section that I really want to emphasize is that to make it clear that we're not putting that burden directly on the district, that the state is fulfilling, really, in a way, its obligation under Moore, which is to support school districts. And I think this is an excellent example of that. So I wanted to express my appreciation to the governor and the department for that.
Thank you, Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, if we want to get through something and we want to hold off details for later, I'm fine with this. But at some point, whether it's now or later, earlier we were you brought up district reading teachers. Now we're talking about reading specialists provided by the department. And I would like to know, and it just looks like the board's going to be setting regulations as far or standards, but we want to make sure that these reading specialists and district reading teachers are well trained and well prepared naturally. And I just was wondering how that might play out and what is there a certain really great program that's worked successfully and we're going to be ready to train these teachers? Because just someone graduating with a teacher certificate might not necessarily be equipped. When I was at an Excellence in Education conference in San Diego this year, I was at in a session where a teacher from Mississippi, where this, by the way, this has worked very, very successfully, but she gave the story of graduating from a program and being put in a situation where she really was not equipped and struggled. And then later she was so thankful when her state adopted this and she had the training and the resources. So I guess I'm curious how we're going to make sure these reading specialists that the department's going to deploy, as well as these district reading teachers, how are we handling that, making sure they're prepared?
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Commissioner, if you're comfortable taking that question, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Hughes. So professional development is a large piece of the Alaska Reads Act, acknowledging that part of our responsibility as a Department of Education is to provide good quality professional development. One thing that I've appreciated about the opportunity to work with Senator Begich, with the input from previous hearings with the governor, is that rather than have separate bills that establishes different expectations, by putting them all in the Alaska Reads Act, we establish an expectation of quality from pre-K all the way through third grade. And so the department will be working to make sure that we demonstrate those expectations in a consistent way across the board. So you've heard about standards for pre-K, and then in this section, when we go in and provide support services to the district, we want to make sure they adhere to the same kind of quality standards. There are a number of programs around the country. I wouldn't say here if we will pick one or if we'll draw on multiple. The other thing I would say is from Best Beginnings, whose books are in front of me and that they give out to the Alaska Reading Coalition, to many others, there's lots of great capacity in our state to help provide the kind of professional development we need to train teachers around the state. And then drawing upon the experience that we've learned from other places in the country like Excel and Ed, and others in the staff development they provide. So staff development, all that to say, staff development is a very big piece of the Alaska Reads Act being successful, and we've already, in hopes of a bill that passes, have been having meetings in the department about how we can begin providing those opportunities. I'll mention one that's happening this weekend, which is the RTI conference, which is going to be focused on...
I'm sorry, say that again, the what conference?
RTI, Response to Intervention Conference. It happens every year. It's the largest conference in the state for educators, about 1,000 educators. It's sponsored by the organization Dr. Parity leads. We'll be providing staff development for about 1,000 educators around the state on reading instruction. With a bill that passes, we'll be able to work even more closely with organizations like Dr. Parity's organization to make sure that the staff development, the professional development that educators are receiving is aligned with what the legislature and the governor have indicated in this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. At this point, I'd like to recognize Senator Mike Cuff from Montana. Senator, pleasure to have you with us. Senator Cuff is the president of the APINWAR, Pacific Northwest Economic Region. He's here visiting us in Alaska, and he's been instrumental, of course, in all sorts of programs, in not only in his state, but also throughout the APINWAR. So thank you, Mike. Pleasure to have you here with us.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Harden, if you would continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Erin Harden. Continuing under this section, schools selected to participate in the literacy program will be required to ensure that the reading specialist or specialists were not required to perform functions that divert from the duties assigned by the department. We would work to coordinate with the reading specialist to redesign the school's daily schedule to provide time dedicated to literacy program activities. We would also ensure that they hold public meetings to present information on the literacy and reading intervention program services to parents and guardians. Also to present an annual update to the public on these program services at a notice public meeting. And work to create partnerships between the school, families, and the community that focus on promoting literacy and increasing time spent reading. And lastly, under this new section, the department will be required to publish on its website and make available to the public a completed application from each school selected to participate in the literacy program, the literacy plan that the school implements at each site, and a data analysis of the success of the literacy program and intervention services conducted by an independent contractor. So I just want to note that to Senator Hughes, you asked the question about accountability measures with respect to the literacy program, and there's that additional measure there that we would be working with an independent contractor to do a data analysis of that success.
For the record, this is Lukey Tobin. I'm going to give Erin a bit of a breather, and we're in the home stretch. So in the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6, Section 15, which is also in Senate Bill 151, Section 14, these sections directs the early education program staff to be included in those organizations that are required to report evidence of child abuse. We've now come to the sections that completely align between sponsor substitute Senate Bill 6 and Senate Bill 151, Section 16. In Section 16, we repeal the early education grant program after 11 years once all the school districts have had an opportunity to participate.
For the record, this is Erin Harden. Moving on to Section 17 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, which appears as a portion of Section 4 of Senate Bill 151, directs the department to conduct performance rankings of all school districts. And then moving on to the last two sections, I should mention that all three sections are focused on the sort of implementation timeline. The next section, which is Section 18 of the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6, which appears as Section 15 of Senate Bill 151, directs the commissioner of the department to provide an implementation progress report to the State Board of Education no later than 30 days after the effective date. And then finally, Section 19 establishes an effective date of July 1, 2020.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the thorough analysis, Ms. Tobin. Ms. Harden, Toby and Ms. Harden, thank you very much for that. And Senator Begich, you have a wrap-up here on the sexual analysis.
Just to wrap up, I wanted to go through another 32 sections if I could, Mr. Chairman. No, the thing I was going to say very quickly was that there might be some questions as to why the grants program terminates and disappears, and that's because every district, as my staff assistant, Ms. Tobin, indicated, every district will have had the opportunity to participate. At that point, if they've chosen not to participate, they're out of luck. So we wanted it to be terminal. We did not want it to be an ongoing grants program because you have the opportunity to move those kids eventually into your ADM count if you have, in fact, developed that qualified program.
Thank you, Senator. I will go to Senator Hughes in a second. But I'd ask you sort of a hold your questions. I was very ambitious in thinking we would cover a lot more than we're able to, but please, Senator Hughes.
Yes, and I confess, you maybe have covered this, because sometimes I'll glance down and start reading, and even though as women we're supposed to be able to do two things at once, read and listen, you really can't. So one of my questions is the effective date's July 1st of this summer. How would this actually play out as far as when we'd see the program up and alive in all the schools across the state? Is there a ramp up?
Thank you, Senator. Commissioner.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I'll just use this as an opportunity to plead for a passage of the bill sooner rather than later, because the fact is, if the bill doesn't pass until late in the session, it will be very hard for us to fully implement a bill next school year. The way that we're addressing it now is that we already are working on ways to the work that will be needed to implement the bill. We had a meeting today and even talked about the standards that go with early learning. There's some existing standards that are being worked on even as we speak through the pre-K development grant. As you know, we got a large federal grant for reading, and through that grant, we're already developing professional development opportunities to provide professional development to staff. So we're not waiting for a bill to pass, but to fully implement the bill, the sooner the better, after due consideration and public input.
So follow up. So if the pass were to, if the bill were to pass in a very timely fashion, and we do this a little bit more quickly than we sometimes do things around here, by this next school year in August, September, when school's starting, you believe you could have things up and running for this very next school year, starting the fall of 2020?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, we are committed to implementing it as much as possible whenever it passes, because we don't want any kids to have to wait another year for some of these things to be implemented. Having said that, it is a tight timeline. Even if the bill passed today, it's a tight timeline. That's why, as you heard, you know, we included some provisions where our recruitment for pre-K folks could include people that may not have a certificate but have had experience teaching in pre-K, because it will take us a while to develop the capacity to recruit the right kind of people to provide the professional development. But we're so excited about the opportunity that we're committed to doing the hard work necessary. We've had an all-staff meeting yesterday. We had a leadership meeting a couple of days ago, and we're focusing the department's energy on implementing this reading bill, because we know it's so fundamental to all the other success that we want kids to have in school.
Thank you, Commissioner. I can guarantee you we will not hold this for any unusual reason. We'll make sure that we thoroughly study it and make sure it's the right bill, but work hard on it, and my intention is to move it out as soon as we are prepared to do so. Senator Coghill.
Well, we have the commissioner here, and maybe for the senator. Currently, for many special education people, we have already implemented education plans, and this is going to probably fly in that same cadre, but above. The first question I have is, does it push against those EIPs in that arena very much? And if so, to what degree do you think that might impact that?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill. So it won't impact the IEP, the Individualized Education Plan, that's required under federal law. So those are a right of the student that's identified as having a disability under special education law. A student that's in special education, their IEP probably will already include the plan that would exist for a non-IEP student that would need a individualized reading plan. There's elements of the IEP that could be included in the other plan, but it would be something a bit different and beyond what is IEPs are specific to what's required by federal law and state law.
And Mr. Chairman, I understood that, but sometimes it's primarily a reading issue, and so we're talking about a program that would work either in concert or above it, and so just wondering how it impacted. I don't have to have the answer today, but that's a question I have. Then the other question, Mr. Chairman, if I might, and this, we don't have to have the answers now, but these are going to be the things I'll be wondering about, and that is for regular reading instruction that most people are in the proficiency arena, at what point are we going to mix these, because there's going to be a correlation with some who are kind of later learners but proficient, but not highly proficient. And so help me understand how, once we reach that spot, how that's going to look in the implementation part of it. Or do you have you thought about some of that?
And Senator, if you don't mind, could we hold those questions, or that the answers until, if you make a note of that, and we'll
that's
get
fine.
Those answers back
Mr.
to
Mr. Chairman, that's fine, because that's going to be one of the questions on implementation.
Right. So a little housekeeping here. I, again, thinking we do too much, but we have an invited testimony that I want to get to. Tom Keeley, Posey Boggs, Bob Griffin, Tim Parker, Angie Galanos, and Alex Frazier. I had planned to do fiscal notes. I'm not going to get to that point. And we're also not going to get public testimony, which I really do apologize for anyone in this room who had come prepared to testify. And I hope that you will be here to testify at a later date. We have a schedule to hear this again on Tuesday, so we'll have an opportunity to hear anybody's
how long do you plan
public
to go,
testimony.
Mr. Chairman? Hmm? How long do you plan to go, Mr. Chairman?
I think probably 5:15, 5:20. We've got several speakers, and we'll try to get through them and give them the time they need. Okay. Tim is setting us up here. And we have with us Tom Keeley. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Keeley. Tom is a policy analyst with the Education Commission of the States, and he's here on teleconference. So can you hear us, Tom?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can hear you. Thank you.
Hold on just a minute. We'll try and jack that up so we can hear you.
Apologies. I can turn my own volume up a little bit, if that's helpful as well.
Actually, that's perfect, Tom. We can hear you just fine. So please, if you'd identify yourself and let us know what you're thinking.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tom Keeley from the Education Commission of the States, and I also have my colleague Joel Moore as well from the Education Commission of the States. We are an organization based in Denver, and we want to extend our thanks to the chair, members of the committee, and the commissioner for the invitation and the opportunity to present a national overview of policy trends in the landscape, and we'll try to do this quickly in the interest of time to allow for others and questions as well. Before we go in, so I believe there is a slide deck within your packet as well. It begins with an orange slide. We have a set of 10 slides, and I'll kind of reference numbers throughout.
Yeah, Mr. Keeley, we have that before us, and everyone in the audience can see it, so please go ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just for a roadmap for where we'll go kind of over the next 10 minutes is we'll briefly introduce ourselves as an organization and kind of suggest how we can support policymakers in the education space and relative to early literacy as well. Then we'll provide an overview of national trends and some policy components as well as some state examples, and then wrap up with lessons learned and some thoughts on implementation, both that we've observed as an organization and other peer organizations have observed in the early literacy space, and leaving some time at the end for questions. So with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Joel Moore.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Joel Moore with the Education Commission of the States. I'm the state liaison to Alaska. So as you guys come up with questions or have any sort of policy concerns, my contact information is on the last page of the slide deck. And I'm happy to have our policy team take a look at whatever you guys need. As a very brief background, we're a national nonpartisan education policy center that was founded by an interstate compact. We're authorized in all 50 state statutes. We have a team of 60 policy people who review all education bills in all 50 states and D.C. And we try to examine trends, issue reports, and find out what else is happening around the country. We're not here to tell you what's best for Alaska. That is your job as the elected officials there, but we are here to provide the national context and let you know what other states are doing and what's working elsewhere. So back to Tom.
Thank you, Joel. For the record, Tom Keeley, Education Commission of the States. Turning now to the national landscape of early literacy, so beginning on slide 4 and transitioning to slide or page 5. To start, before we dive into state examples, I would like to provide some context based on some work done by the Council of Chief State School Officers in how states are processing and thinking about, in a general sense, early literacy legislation. With that, on the slide, you'll see a layout of kind of three general terms: prevention, intervention, and retention. So to kind of walk through that briefly before we discuss state examples, in this context, prevention is related to efforts or provisions intended to increase overall quality of reading instruction and develop a system of support for early literacy. So generally in policy, some of the components that we do see around prevention often touch on topics such as state, district, or school literacy plans, goal setting and monitoring, curriculum, teacher licensure, and professional development relative to early literacy and instruction. The second grouping there is intervention. So intervention is relating to efforts or provisions that identify and diagnose reading difficulties in individuals and provide targeted support to develop reading and literacy skills. In policy, oftentimes this will look like interventions touching on diagnostic screeners, development of individual reading plans for students, intervention strategies, so either during the school day, at the school level, or summer or out-of-school programming, as well as parental notification and involvement, so involving parents and guardians in the process. And finally, the third category, being retention, is a provision that, that allows or requires holding of students back in their progression through the grades based on some agreed-upon measure, either at the state level or the local level. This can oftentimes be required or allowed, but oftentimes the policy outlines the role of district or the school-level staff or officials in the decision-making process, as well as exemptions and state-level overall requirements or what the district level requires. And also, as part of that, post-retention intervention and support, so students that may be retained or held back in their progression, what supports are they being provided to help progress and develop their reading and literacy skills. With that, I'll transition to slide six, which is titled State Examples, National Context. Just for information, the examples provided here are just a general collection of state policy, literacy, early literacy policy, not selected for any value or anything of that nature, just to kind of show the range of ways states are thinking about prevention, intervention, and retention. According to the 2019 CCSSO report referenced earlier, there's 26 states that have some form of early literacy policy in their state. 12 of those states include elements of prevention, intervention, retention within their early literacy policy. Generally, the observations that we see across the states, policies include approaches to reading instruction and teacher professional development, so how do states support teachers as they provide instruction, and also with that, some district-level or state-level planning associated with that. So looking at the goals of developing literacy in the state, how will states carry that out? Moving on to the intervention, oftentimes we see screeners, so looking at screeners as a diagnostic tool in for students in pre-K through third grade in some instances. So you'll see in Arizona it is a pre-K to third grade, and that ranges across the states as well, where those screeners are offered and when they are offered throughout the year, and what's required to be done with that data to inform instruction and intervention and support. We also see mechanisms to provide resources to school districts and schools and teachers, so looking at how the professional development support and resources come from the state or the district, and we often see that outlined in policy. We also see requirements to notify and engage parents and guardians in the process across policy, and in terms of intervention retention, there is a focus on both the allowance or requirement. That's kind of a major difference in terms of allowing or requiring retention. Not all states require or allow retention as well, but also looking at the role of school-level officials in that decision and where that decision is ultimately made based on a state standard or a localized standard. Turning over to slide seven, it's just I wanted to provide a visual of just where retention policy is across the country and the difference between requirement and allowing. And in the interest of time, I'll transition to the final slide, which is lessons learned and implementations. So this is a series of the bulleted list before you of observations made by CCSSO and ECS, both in work in the States and also looking at policy as it's played out over the last 20-plus years across the states. So much of this looks at, some of it's, right, the first bullet, passing a law is only the beginning. That's an obvious statement to a legislative body. However, I think one thing that we keep hearing from states is once the bill goes into effect, what are the steps and engagement that needs to happen in order to make the policy live and get to the student and school level? Within that, we've seen states start to think about how do you engage stakeholders early on in the process, and thinking about who needs to, what information needs to be shared, and how do you develop a plan to carry forward the policy within the state. Recently, some states who have thought about some of those engagement plan development and timeline implementation is Michigan and Alabama specifically are in the process of rolling out their policy and implementing it relative to some timelines and communication strategies that they developed. We'd be happy to provide some more information on that if that is at all helpful for the committee. Frequently reports document the key of communication, so not only what's the impact or potential impact of the policy once it goes live, but what are the resources schools need, district leaders need, parents and guardians need. We see that to be a key step in making sure that all understand the goals and desired outcomes of the policy, as well as how it may affect a child, a teacher, or a district leader. And finally, looking at the commitment over the long term and making sure that there's measures to evaluate from the beginning. So what is being measured and how are you going to determine success on for students being able to develop their literacy skills in the early years. So with that, I'd like to pause and I'd welcome any questions. If we can't answer the questions in full today, a service that ECS does provide is looking in depth and doing individual research for legislative committees or individual policymakers. So we'd be happy to do that for this body as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Keeley. Mr. Moore, the Education Commission of the States has been very effective and appreciate over the years your contributions to education. Any questions at this time or comments or concerns from the presentation? Again, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and appreciate the slideshow you have sent us, and we have copies of that. I'm sure we'll all spend some time going through that more thoroughly and get in touch with any questions we have. Thank you again, Mr. Keeley, Mr. Moore.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to make a slight adjustment to our public testimony. We'll go on to Posey Boggs and then Tim Parker. And we've asked Mr. Griffin from the Alaska Policy Forum to if he could come later and maybe on Tuesday or later date, whatever his schedule allows. And also Angel Galanos will try and work that out later as well. So as it is 5:15, we'll go to two more testifiers, go on to Posey Boggs. Ms. Boggs, always a pleasure to see you. You've always been at the forefront of all of these discussions and had an opportunity to talk to you early today in my office. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's get all settled here because we have a participation activity coming up because I like them. So my name is Posey Boggs. What do we need to do? That good? All right, thank you. Do I need to spell my name on the record?
Pardon me?
Do I need to spell my name?
No, we know who you are. We know where to find you.
You do. I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Reading Coalition. Excuse me. I'll breathe. Alaska Reading Coalition. And I was going to tell you like a whole page of who's in it, but I decided in honor of your time I won't. But we have a lot of thank yous, and that is to Governor Dunleavy and Commissioner Johnson and Senator Bagage and your whole collective staff for working very strongly at apparently risk to be bipartisan, which I don't understand at all because I'm not you guys. You crafted a bill that has a lot of excellent things in it, and we appreciate it. We thank all of the sponsors of the bill. We thank Senator Giesel and Senator Gray Jackson for jumping in and sponsoring it also. We want to thank Senator Hughes for all your long, hard work on this, in addition to Representative Ledoux. And going all the way back, the first time we met Representative Ledoux was HB 197, quite a long time ago. I want to thank my team, who have given me tons of support, but I also want to thank Representative Drummond and her staff, George Ascott, for getting the task force accomplished and the bill and the outcome of that. Senator Stevens, in 2013, I think it was SB 106, it was the first time I testified, and you schooled me. I said, look, I want you to do something so I don't have to have so many students. I'm working too hard. I have too many kids on my waiting list. Please fix it. And you said, you better keep working. Something like that. I wanted you to put me out of business. I want to give a shout out to Spike Torgerson, Superintendent Tok School District from a long time ago. I met him around 2000, maybe the end of 2013, during the Governor Walker transition time at the Education Transition Committee, and I walked in. I had my big Literate Nation book, and he walked in. He sees, like, just moms. And he says, what are you doing here? And I handed him this tome, this big. The first part was a story. The second part was model state reading legislation. And he goes, oh, this is interesting. 2 weeks later, he called me. And he said that that book and the knowledge of evidence-based reading instruction was what was missing from the Moore case. It was missing in the knowledge of all the people working on it, the educators and the judge herself, Judge Gleason herself. And so I do thank him very much. But we're going to jump to, darn, Senator Coghill's not here. This was for him. My daughter lives in Healy, close enough to Fairbanks. And what I wanted to do was give an example of what the heck this animal called phonemic awareness is and phonological awareness. Because if you don't feel it, you won't understand what it is different from phonics. And it's very different. So we're going to go ahead and do it. And I do this with my four-year-old grandson. He's almost four. And it starts like this. I take him to the cupcake store, and I buy him a nice big cupcake. He's so happy. And I say, Jackson, say cupcake. Let me hear it.
Cupcake.
Jackson, say cupcake. Don't say cake. When he's 3 years old, he goes, I don't know what you're talking about, cupcake. But now that he's 3.5 years old, he says, cake. That is phonological awareness. Did I use any letters? No. It's oral language. And I know a few weeks later, he's up in Healy with his mother and father, and he's telling them, Mom, say cupcake. Don't say cake. So it's totally age-appropriate phonological awareness. But now I'm going to give you a hard one. Say late. Say late, don't say all. What's left? Eight. Like I ate something, right? I'll give you an even harder one. Say feet. Say feet, don't say eat. Exactly. And then, this is the last one I'll torture you with. Say done. Instead of duh, say run, exactly. That is what we're talking about. And phonological and phonemic awareness is critically important. It's not enough, but it's been missing in our teachers' education, professional development, ever since it was discovered. We had a nice conference in the fall. It changes the brain, this phonological and phonemic awareness, and it's totally appropriate, but we get pushback on it, mostly from preschool teachers and early educators, because they think that it's not, I don't know what they think, it's either not necessary, or they're not trained in it, or they think it's direct instruction, or they think it's not age appropriate. It's oral language, and it is. And it's just, they don't know what they don't know. So I will get back to my regular. Sorry. We are very grateful for the bipartisan nature of how the Alaska Reads Act was developed. It is amazing, and but it's not unusual in reading bills. Across the nation, I did a real quick survey of my peers, and about 15 states immediately, within a couple of hours, told me their votes on the reading bills. Almost all of them were unanimous, with just a few nay votes occasionally on some of the bills. And this is across the nation. So with 15 reading and dyslexia bills, that was unanimous. So it feels really cool here in Alaska to see the bipartisan nature, and we thank everyone for that, but it's actually not unusual with reading bills. So thank you. Ensuring that our kids learn how to read, it is morally imperative. We can't have a democratic government without it. If we don't teach our kids to read, they can't read original documents. They can't read the Constitution, which is written above a 12th grade level. So if we're not producing readers, how can they read the Magna Carta? How can they read the Bill of Rights? How can they read a statute? So this is very, very incredibly important, and we can't let our kids be sidelined from all of that great information. I'm going to skip in honor of your time, and I'm going to say this. The adults in this state have a choice. We have a choice to do what is comfortable for adults and what we've always done. We can turn to the same people we've always turned to. We can hire the same interventionist that got us right where we are right now. So if we do that, we're going to cause a delay in the implementation of this bill, and we're going to cause a delay in our students learning to read. We need a highly defined comprehensive reading plan. No wiggle room, no wishy-washy language. It needs to be defined, or we, again, will delay the outcomes. We need to use every tool. We need to think outside of the box. But most importantly, we need to teach superintendents and principals, especially, how to recognize when they are being exquisite consumers. They need to be better consumers of reading instruction, because they don't know what they don't know. And so they can easily get bamboozled by reading instruction that is not going to work and not evidence-based. I remind you that in Arkansas, the vendors just put a sticker on the same old reading instruction, and districts who, you know, bought that curriculum, they're stuck with it for 7 years. So our superintendents and our principals have to have better knowledge. Turning to the a few things about the Alaska Read Act, we do have some specific recommendations, and we've created a document that we hope will be uploaded. It has alternative statute language, it has our rationales, and it has publications that back up those rationales.
One of the most important features that I'm really excited about is the universal preschool. Universal preschool is an opportunity to screen our kids for potential characteristics of dyslexia, but also which one of our English language kids are developing oral English adequately. And that screening should drive what we term a universal intervention. A universal intervention everybody gets. You know, wear your bicycle helmet. Don't smoke. Wear your seatbelt. That is a universal intervention. It goes to everyone. And in preschool, it sets kids up to really be successful in kindergarten and first grade and second grade. I'm going to skip over some of this, and then you can read it in the documents. There's some cutting-edge work being done right now in Boston Children's Hospital and University of Connecticut that with 90% accuracy, we are identifying kids with dyslexia characteristics at 4 years old. And the researchers right now are giving that app, it's an app, away. They want it in the public's hands. And it is a very exciting, and if I were the state of Alaska, I would take the time to go to the scientists and sign up to be part of the standardization, the national standardization of that app. And it will not only identify our kids with dyslexia, it will identify our kids who have English language learning issues. And it'll set our kids up to succeed. Wow, I'm getting through this. We do have some work to do. There's conflicting terminology in the bill, and I really hope to help take some of that conflicting terminology out, and I'm more than willing to do that. We need to emphasize that this is a reading act, not a literacy act. The problem with the word literacy is it gives wiggle room to not pay attention to reading. I can't even define literacy, and I worked real hard at it. I can measure reading. That's why scientists love reading, because it's easily measured with very tight metrics. But literacy, who knows what that is? English language arts, I'm not sure I know what that is either. But reading is reading. Reading is scientifically defined in the Federal Register. And I can give the statute and all of that, but I won't take the time. It was delineated in the Reading Task Force and Dyslexia Task Force report. Look at that, I'm omitting all of this. If Alaska chooses to follow the true intent of the Alaska Reading Act by cleaning up the weak language, we won't be delayed in the implementation of a comprehensive reading plan. It appears that the most controversial issue surrounds retention. We're not in favor of any hard retention. We're children themselves, parents, teachers, and principals, and superintendents, and school boards have no choice. We don't see the logic in it. But we're not going to fight a soft retention. We're not going to fight that. However, we do not understand the logic of it. I use the word logic very specifically, and this is why. States with retention policies, Florida, Texas, Mississippi, were well into their implementation of their comprehensive reading plan, some more than a decade, before they push the retention button. And we've never had a comprehensive reading plan. So what is the basis for having retention when we've never had a reading plan? We've never had our teachers supported well enough or our school district supported well enough with a comprehensive reading plan that is in the Alaska Reading Act, and we think that we can strengthen that. I'm going to skip the Mississippi piece, but there's a lovely graphic that shows their timeline, and it was in year 13 of their implementation when they discovered that school districts were not following the comprehensive reading plan, nor were colleges of education following the two reading courses, the syllabuses set out in scientifically based reading instruction. They were not doing it for 13 years. That's a huge delay. What Mississippi did, which is important and exciting, and I would keep my eyes on Mississippi, they gathered most of their reading professors and they spent 2 or 3 years retraining them in evidence-based reading practices. The first part was just fighting their indoctrination in what they'd always done. It was a lot. And then they gave them really good instruction, and the reading professors moved on. Was there pushback on their retention law? Absolutely, from districts. But the legislators of Mississippi said it fell on unsympathetic ears. They had 13 years to implement the comprehensive reading plan. Shame on them. And so I won't go into it too much. But I think I'll handle it this way. Bob Griffin, I think I met him a couple of years back, and Mike Bronson from the NAACP Education Committee in Anchorage. Both of those men have been wonderful. And I worked really hard in different ways of pulling them into our circle and into evidence-based reading instruction, comprehensive reading plans. We have in our emails a month-long high-level debate between these two debaters that was so respectful. It was so knowledgeable. And occasionally we jump in, but boy, we jump right back out of that debate, you know. And they cited evidence. They shared data. They shared articles. And at the end, no real conclusion on retention. But it was a delightful experience to be a part of. And I honor both of them. I think they've moved in their understanding. I'll see what I can skip here. So how do you know if a reading plan or a reading legislation is really addressing the adults in the room, or if it's really addressing the kids, our kids? You look for keywords. Keywords such as making decisions about reading instruction based on how you feel or what your philosophy is, or science, but then saying, well, that's not my science. Science is science. Reading happens in the brain, not your elbow. So the science that we are talking about is what is producing the evidence-based reading instruction. If you talk to somebody who tells you about the wonders of whole language, the wonders of reading recovery, the wonders of Marie Clay from New Zealand, you have to know that that person doesn't know what they don't know. And if they're indoctrinated into that and so committed to it, then you're talking to somebody who needs their knowledge recalibrated, and it's not their fault. It's what they've been trained in. And just know New Zealand banned that reading methodology. If you're told that phonological and phonemic awareness is not a part of oral language, or that direct instruction in these two are not developmentally appropriate, I think you just experienced it is developmentally appropriate, but you're talking to somebody who's thinking about the adults in the room and not what the child needs. If you talk to somebody who says this bill is just pushing drill and kill phonics, then you're talking to somebody who's out of date on their knowledge about reading. And they don't even know the cutting edge language, orthographic mapping. So if they don't know that one, then they're out of tune with the evidence. If we're talking about how a program was implemented in a district 10 or 15 years ago or 20 years ago, you're talking to somebody who has not updated what they know. How we implemented something that many years ago is totally different than what is being implemented across the state. Implementation science in education in 2013 was in its infancy. We didn't have data on how do you implement a program. So what the method for implementation from a long time ago is not the method that should be used today. I do encourage you to go to the Moore case and read the testimony of the superintendents. It's very, very telling, especially look for Superintendent Davis's testimony from the Bering Straits School Board. And it's no wonder superintendents of today are gun shy about this. When you look at the heavy lift he had to do across his district without support that's in the Alaska Reading Act, no wonder superintendents are going, oh my gosh, this is another unfunded mandate. We're not going to be supported. We're going to have to do all this stuff that we don't even know because, golly, I'm a math teacher. I don't know how to teach reading. I can't even recognize good instruction. So going, I think it'd be very informative to read the comments from those superintendents. On the other hand, Superintendent Davis implemented the Success for All reading program that back then, it was just phonics. Only one out of five of the essential components of reading instruction. And he had fabulous results. But I bet you it was a heavy, heavy lift and probably drained the resources of his whole district to make those gains. If we do the Alaska Reading Bill correctly, I misspoke, the Alaska Reading Act correctly, we will be able to support those superintendents. And what will happen, we'll get those same kind of gains and we'll get them faster. We'll get them faster. So I encourage you to banish these sorts of soft words about reading instruction. Some of the items in this bill will draw national and international fame, in my opinion. One of the ones that I'm most excited about is the correspondence school that says for all Alaskans. Senator Stevens, as a volunteer at the Alaska Literacy Program, I had a constituent of yours. And this person moved and left Kodiak, even though he'd been there for families, tons of family. And he came because he was so desperate as an older young adult to learn how to read. He, at great expense, he moved to Anchorage. And he tried really hard at the Alaska Literacy Program, but he couldn't sustain it because of cost. If we do and design an Alaskan correspondence program for adults, for all Alaskans, somebody like him would not have to uproot himself at great expense. And there's, I sure hope if that actually gets passed, whoever's in charge of that had better reach out to me, because I know how to design it so that my friend from Kodiak would not have suffered so much. Does Alaska have growth? Sure, in small enclaves, perhaps. However, I want you to watch out for the misuse of growth statistics when they are presented independent of achievement statistics. You gotta be careful there. And I also caution you about, and we look at this very carefully every time we get presented data. We go to the it's the IES, it's the federal government, because they have something called the seven canons from the National Forum on Education Statistics, and their ethical standards. And so any data that is presented to you, there's some checklist things you need to watch out for, and one of them is the manipulation of the x-axis. On an x-axis, if you don't show the lowest kids, let's just use a number on a scale from 0 to 100, and you only show the 35, you start your scale at 35, what the heck about the kids who are under 35? So really make sure that you're watching out for that kind of data. I want to tell you about the Peter effect. This is from the Bible, Peter chapter 3:8. So I don't do the Bible. As it's applied to reading instruction, you recall what Mississippi had to do to retrain their professors. The Peter effect says that you can't pass on to somebody else what you do not know. And you might reach out to the Anchorage School District and inquire what their rationale was for pulling their support for their leadership master's program to another university. And I've heard this over the years from quite a few people at the Anchorage School District. The inability to get the University of Alaska Anchorage to do as they were requested to do is a big barrier to our kids and our teachers receiving the proper education, and it's unacceptable, and it has to stop. So we can cave in for the next 20 years, but we're going to miss the financial gains. For example, 5 school districts in Ohio, which is the hotbed of Marie Clay and whole language, they received targeted reading instruction and professional development. Each district received $40,000 in evidence-based reading instructional training, and the cost savings in their Tier 3 interventions was an average of $1,100 per student. Tier 3 means these kids are severe enough for an IEP. They're severe enough to go into special education. And so across a whole district, $40,000 of training is, I don't think it's that much, but the gain back is a prevention of kids ending up in Tier 3 in the first place or in special education. Cautioning you, big publishers make billions of dollars off of reading failure. If they had a product that taught reading, would they need to do so many trainings? Would you need to get a new curriculum over and over again? You wouldn't. They are making money off of the failure of reading instruction. I advise you to listen to the full interview with Emily Hanford from the American Public Media outlet. She did an interview with Ken Goodman, who is one of the major players in this flawed idea about how reading should be taught. He, instead of teaching kids how to read, he's teaching kids how to be a poor reader. And that is infused in our reading curriculum. So in some ways, I have a heavy heart that some of the language in the Reading Task Force report was not infused enough in this bill. When the report was turned in, that very next week we submitted a very drafty omnibus reading bill. And that was it. We didn't hear back. And I think this bill could have been spectacular had we been, you know, consulted. I waited all summer, and it's like I didn't know what to do. We absolutely commit, and we look forward to working with you, with the senators, with the representatives, this whole process, the Department of Education. We're not going away. That whole page is the Alaska Reading Coalition. It has a huge range of people. And we can make this Reading Act spectacular. We have to, and I'm going to tell you why. I think before Christmas, a veteran special education teacher reached out to me, and she said, I have this young second grader who is brilliant, cannot read his own name, knows maybe 10 letters, knows maybe their sounds, has excellent phonemic awareness. Very unusual for a student with dyslexia. Very unusual. Only about 15% of dyslexic kids have excellent phonemic awareness. So she makes it okay. I go into the classroom and I meet this student. And I do my thing. I kind of feel things out. I check him out. And I say, oh, okay, I'm going to teach you, Miss Teacher, how to do orthographic mapping. That's what's missing, I can tell. And so I showed her. I only saw her one time, maybe a total of 40 minutes at the most. I showed her what it was and what to do with this young student. And she called me about 2 weeks later, and she said, oh my gosh, her student knows many more letters and their sounds. And I go, oh good, and he can read his name. Then she called me a week later, and she said that this young student ran into the classroom screaming, I can read, I can read. And I feel bad for him because he's way behind. But going from not being able to read the word cat or run or dog to being able to read that, and I just gave her this tiny bit of missing information. That's all. That's all. And this boy was so, so happy. And this teacher, veteran teacher, was going, why didn't I know this? Why didn't I know this? So it's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful, you know, thing. I've had, when I go to a classroom of a middle school teacher, and she let me come into her classroom, and I just sit and I watch. I'm not going to, you know, tell her what to do, but when I, after I'm observing, I go, oh, well, in your process, what you're already doing, this is how you can bring in the evidence-based instruction. Here, you don't have to change what you're doing from a curriculum. You have to know how to leverage it. So this is about teacher knowledge. Our state may not have the expertise to meet the needs of our the State Department of Education for sending these coaches into the districts. They may not have that level of expertise. There's options to get it quickly. And there's methodologies, and also if we think completely out of the box, we can do something really unique in Alaska. I'm here for questions, but I know that it's not timely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Posey Boggs, I really appreciate your comments always, and I know you will follow this bill as it progresses through the legislature. I can guarantee you that, at least as far as I can guarantee anything, is that when this bill leaves this committee, it will have a realistic fiscal note on it. It's not going to be an unfunded mandate. I believe we're in the right position to make sure it's properly funded with the governor on our interested, the commissioner's interest, and everyone else's. So we'll make sure that when it leaves this committee, at least, it will have a realistic fiscal note on it. Thank you very much, Posey, and I'm sure we'll be in contact as this moves along.
All right. Thank you.
I do appreciate those others who were going to testify that we weren't able to get to, particularly Bob Griffin, who flew down here specifically to be here. Bob, I greatly appreciate your involvement from the last State Board of Education, last policy forum, and Bob has agreed to possibly return on Tuesday to give his testimony. Tim Parker, again, here, I assume for this and other reasons, but NEA Alaska, sorry we weren't able to get to you. I understand we might be able to work that out on Friday, so we'll make every attempt. We also have Ann Galanos, which will work with us as well to do a teleconference with her and Alex Frazier. So at this point, I'm going to set Senate Bill 6 and Senate Bill 151 aside for further review. And if there's no further business coming before us, thank you all for being here, and we're adjourned.